This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight, the reigning, defending, undisputed, universal heavyweight champion,
Wildcat Radio 2.0. Bear down, you beautiful people.
What's up, everybody? This is Wildcat Radio 2.0. I'm Adam Green. He's Brett Barry. And Brett, we kind of thought it might happen last week, or we talked about it last week. We assumed it would be done this week, and it is. Arizona baseball has hired a replacement, a new coach to replace the departed for LSU, Jay Johnson. Chip Hale, the prodigal son, returns.
Exactly who you were rooting for them to hire, right, Adam?
We talked about this last week. I wrote about it for AZ Desert Swarm. That was not the type of hire I wanted them to make. And it's not that I don't like Chip Hale. It's just that, to me, I'll just put it out there, if he was not an Arizona alum, do you think anyone who likes his hire would have been like, yeah, Chip Hale? No. Like, there's nothing in his background that says that's a great get for Arizona baseball. Not even with the alum part, just his background, his track record doesn't say he's the right guy. It just doesn't.
Yeah, I don't disagree, and this is the everybody wants the alumni crowd. It's got to be very excited about this. The funny thing is, you said, like, if it wasn't for him being an alumni, would he even be a candidate for this job? Probably not, or at least not a serious one. Which another way of framing it that is kind of interesting is, would any other school consider Chip Hale for their head coaching position in college baseball?
Right.
I'm not sure they would, because he's relatively old. He's never been a head coach in college. He doesn't have any recruiting experience, which I think he addressed in the press conference today. We're recording on July 7th.
Oh, right at the beginning he addressed that. Yeah, he knows it's an issue.
Yeah, it was very clear to me that he and Dave Hickey pay attention to what goes on in the media and on the boards and then people on Twitter talking about what they want and what candidates are missing and lacking, because he went out and said, yeah, I know what I don't know, and that's recruiting. It's like, that's what you want to hear from your head coach.
I don't know
recruiting.
Well, I will say, word of advice is find someone who loves you as much as Tucson media loves the idea of alumni coming over and taking over programs, coming back and taking over programs.
God.
Because, like, and we've talked about it before, when you hire the hometown hero, there's always that risk, because what if they don't pan out? They're not all Adia Barnes. You know, sometimes they'll go a program, you get a Jeff Hornacek, and you have to fire the hero, the one that everyone loved. Like, that's rough. And we don't know who all Arizona, I guess Wasikowski, they supposedly offered the job to him at Oregon. He has some Arizona background, but he's also been a head coach at Oregon, been very good. And then he just turned it down, got a raise from Oregon. Okay. We don't know where Chip Hale was on the list for Dave Hickey. You know, we heard some of the names. Checkets was out there as a name. Like, oh, that would be great. Well, I think the rumor was from the guy Rogers on Twitter was that Arizona didn't think they'd wanted to pay him as much as it would have taken to pry him away from UCSB. So was Chip Hale the third choice, the fourth choice, the fifth choice? Like, how far did they go to get to Chip Hale? And, like, I'm not saying he's going to fail. Like, I respect that he came in as like, yeah, there's things I don't know. I'm smart enough to know that, like, what I don't know, and try to hire guys and surround himself with people who can fix that. Because if Chip Hale comes in as a smart baseball guy, and he knows baseball, right, and he does care about this program probably more than any coach they could have ever hired. Like, that's true. He's going to give it everything he has. But to your point, Brett, like you were saying, it's like, you don't – the fact that he comes in and says, yep, I don't know recruiting. I'm going to have to learn that and get guys to help me with that. It's like, this is Arizona baseball, and we talked about it last week. It's the thing I wrote for AZ Desert Swarm. You'd like to think, and maybe we were wrong, But you'd like to think that Arizona baseball could get a more turnkey, ready-made coach than the one they just got.
Yeah, it fits like a smaller program. Like, oh, let's get the alumni guy to come back, and it's probably Chip Hale's last job before he retires, right? Like, he's not that. If he works 5-6 years, maybe last 10 years, and it's great. It's his last job, right?
You think?
So for the crowd that's also nervous about your coaches getting hired away, which I am on the record of saying that I think that is a stupid thing to be afraid of.
I don't know. It might happen, and you're left with Chip Hale as your replacement.
Well, that's those are independent things. To be fair, sidebar, also, Jay Johnson's salary is like literally more than double what we're giving Chip Hale, even right. with the buyout that that we get from Jay Johnson. So it's like everybody that's given Jay Johnson crap, it's like, okay, let me have somebody offer you double the salary and, you know, everything you want in a job, and then turn them down because, you know, you're just not going to.
Nope.
But yeah, like you said, like the local media, there were some people that asked good questions. Michael Lev tried to ask a little bit of a more pointed question, but boy, there was, you know, one guy was like, you know, what would Jerry Kindle be looking down, you know, from if he could call you today?
A lot of these guys covered Chip Hale. They like him, and he's, by all accounts, a really good guy. You know, like, this is the type, like, they don't, there is things to like about Chip Hale.
Oh,
there's
sure.
just, to me, not enough to like about Chip Hale, Arizona baseball coach. That's it. Well, and I'm not trying to pile on and talk crap about Tucson media, because we've seen a lot of U of A fans the same thing. They just love the idea of an alumni coming back and taking over programs. You know, it's like, and I asked Michael Lev this last week, and I kind of wonder if Dave Hickey saw this as a chance to, for the football people who are like, oh, you didn't hire a football alum, and for basketball, they didn't hire Damon Stoudamire, you know. But hey, look, we got you an alum in baseball. There you go. Be happy with us. There's your alum, right? It almost seems like, because Chip Hale was not the best candidate out there. He just wasn't. Now, he might have been the best by the time all the other ones said no, but he certainly should, if he was at the top of the list, then that was a bad list.
Well, Oregon was got a, he pulled an old muscleman on us and used us to get a new contract and a raise, right?
Yeah.
I think he was higher on the list. I personally would have been more intrigued at the Washington State head coach, who hasn't been there very long, but he's, you know, was at New Mexico State, knows the general area, knows the Southwest, has been a head coach, seeming to have initial success. Yeah, if what you're saying is even remotely true, where it's like, give the media and the fan base their alum, boy, that's such a stupid reason to hire
somebody. I don't want to make it sound like that's what happened here. I don't know. This is, and I'm not even saying that's what I think happened here. But it's certainly, how many people were upset when Jed Fish was hired? I mean, a lot of people were upset when Jed Fish was hired. But there were a lot of people just clamoring for an alum to take that job. But for Arizona football, they had lost 12 straight games. You know, the programs at the bottom of the conference, if not all of Power 5, it made sense that they had to reach, go out of the box for someone. Basketball with Tommy Lloyd, who, he was one of the most highly thought of assistant coaches in the game. Like, sure, he's a first-time head coach for Arizona basketball. Normally, that would not be okay, except for the fact that Arizona basketball is in an interesting spot still, with possible sanctions and things coming down the pike. And again, Tommy Lloyd was about thought of as ready to be a head coach in college basketball as anybody out there. This is Arizona baseball. They're coming off a trip to Omaha. You know, it's a pretty loaded roster coming back, and like, I hope to be wrong on this. I really do, because, like I said, Chip Hale seems like a good guy. Arizona fans love him. Obviously, Arizona media is fond of him, too. And it might work out, you know, because he came into the press conference. I think he said the right things. He didn't come and say, oh, I'm going to recruit great. He's like, no, I have to learn. But his personality, his experience, assuming they know who to target, he might be able to go into living rooms and be like, yeah, I'm going to teach your son, you're going to teach your kid how to play baseball the right way and get to the major leagues, because he's coached in the major leagues. So there are things to say, okay, this could work, but just, I don't like could for Arizona baseball. I want this should work. This will work.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. I watched the press conference. He says the right things, but it's like, you know, there's so many softballs. Are we sure this is a baseball press conference? Am I right? You know, and I'm with you that I don't necessarily think it is doomed to be a failure, because I do think Chip Hale knows baseball. He's going to, and another thing he was very obvious about was, look at me, I have all this major league experience. And Dave Hickey was clearly highlighting that. And it's all true. And there's a reason why he's had a successful career as a coach in the, and, you know, working up through the majors.
Like a long career as a coach, especially. Yeah.
Yeah. So like the, he can lead, he clearly is going to, based on the way they framed it in the press conference, that like they're hoping that, look at all the, I know the majors, therefore, and baseball, therefore that is my way of recruiting, which to some extent we've seen a success with that. And when you hear from some of the recruiting people that are talking about in NFL with Jed Fish, where he's playing that card real hard as well. And it seems to be working there. You know, will that work in baseball quite as well? I don't know. And recruiting in baseball, like we've talked about in the past, is different than in football. They don't have full ride scholarships normally.
Is it like 11 and a half scholarships or something like that to give
out? Yeah, so there's a lot of partial scholarships. There's a lot of roster management. There's a lot of – one of the things Jay Johnson was great at was convincing guys to not become a pro even after they got drafted – even if they were at U of A, just cause, like, I can help you get more money next year, right? Or if they're coming out of high school, like, I will help get you, you know, be a top 5 round pick instead of round 20 pick, right? Maybe Chip Hale can do that. Maybe he can surround himself with the right people. It's a, you know, the program is historically a great program, you know, if not the top tier, you know, not far behind that. But, you know, it's I think the right way to frame it is it's at best a curious hire.
Right.
We'll have a clearer sense, I think. You know, maybe he'll pull a Jed Fish and pull guys out of the transfer portal, because right now it's like we have some talent on the roster, but like, how much do we have, and how many people are going to stick around, and what's going to plug those holes?
That kind of leads me to my question here for you, Brett, is because when we talked about Jed Fish, he has a long honeymoon period. You know, the team is awful. If they win 3 games, 4 games, if it's 4 games, we get beer from Ronnie Stoffel. But, like, no one's expecting much out of Jed Fish in football, right? People are excited about the recruiting. They're excited about the buzz. They're excited about the coaching staff you put together. It's like, okay, it's going to take time, but they're heading in the right direction. Basketball with Tommy Lloyd, I think there's going to be pretty high expectations because the team was good last season. They brought a lot back. You know, just because he's missed on a couple recruiting targets, people are getting antsy, you know, but there's expectations there, and rightfully so. For Chip Hale taking over this team, again, that was in Omaha this past season, you know, and yes, they've lost some players, some to LSU, some to the draft, and some are in the transfer portal, but what's going to constitute success for Chip Hale in year one? Because of course, largely this is going to be Jay Johnson's roster. You know, it's not going to be guys that Chip Hale brought on board. And so it's almost like if they don't get back to Omaha, that's a disappointment, right? Which isn't fair because it's hard to get that far. But what do we need to see from Chip Hale in year one to feel like, okay, this could be the right hire?
Oh, man, that's a hard question to answer, because I think Chip Hale in the baseball program actually has the shortest grace period of the three big men sports that you just mentioned.
Yeah.
I think Jed Fish has a long runway. He's built enough, you know, credibility and goodwill through sheer effort and like positive momentum in the offseason, and absolutely zero expectation. Like, even the most optimistic fans are like, hey, man, 4 wins is huge. Right. And in basketball, I think that Tommy Lloyd can – I think the expectations will be high and the visibility is high, but I think there's still the lingering, you know, post-John Miller question IARP that'll buy him some time. If Arizona doesn't compete for the Pac-12 title next year, like if they're like a 6th or 7th place team after they've had sustained success and we're just in, you know, Omaha – we're ranked number 5 nationally going into it, and still going to have significant talent returning. And if you're, you know, have enough talent and you're inherently a baseball guy, like a developer and strategist around talent, I actually think his grace period is the shortest. Like if he's not, I'm not saying he has to get to Omaha, but boy, if you're in like not even like top half of the Pac-12, like, this is where it gets awkward when you're like, because like he'll benefit though from the least amount of visibility of the three main sports, I guess, is the thing he's got going for him. But to me, you got to be finishing in the top half of the Pac-12, or that's where people are going to start grumbling quickly.
And that kind of makes me think of what, when you hire the hometown hero, he's supposed to have that leeway, that latitude. But in this case, you don't have that whole, well, he has a track record of success. You can't say, okay, they're struggling now, but this guy knows how to bring in talent, knows how to develop talent. Give him a year or two, he'll be fine. You know, there's, that doesn't exist with Chip Hale. And not to say he has a success like of being a bad coach either. You know, he hasn't failed as a college baseball coach. And like I said earlier, and he kind of mentioned it, like this, he said, is a dream job. Now, every coach who's taken this job, I think, said it's their dream job. But with Chip Hale's case, I'm pretty sure you can believe that. You know, this is his destination. I think he was asking the press conference if he'd ever kind of looked at this job before. It's come open before. And he's like, well, the last time he was coaching in Major League Baseball, like he was a Major League Baseball manager. So wasn't really looking to leave that to come coach U of A, but that he's always wanted to have this job. And I believe that. I do. And I have no doubt if he fails, it's not going to be due to a lack of effort. You know, but just I wish I could look at this hire and say, I am confident this will be successful. And successful isn't necessarily being in Omaha every year. But yeah. Like Jay Johnson got there twice in 6 years, right? You know, they would have made the tournament last year probably if there was one. They missed it a couple of times. So he wasn't amazing. But you look at that run and say, okay, that is fine. Like, I will take that for Arizona baseball. So for Chip Hale, it doesn't have to be the best in the Pac-12 winning the conference year after year, because that, what was it, they won it this year for the first time in like 30 years outright?
Yeah.
So it's, the expectations aren't like that astronomical. It's just like maintain what they've had. And like Chip Hale said all the right things. He did. You know, he didn't lose the press conference, but the right things he said were all like you said, like they weren't particularly inspiring other than, yeah, we want to root for you. We want you to work out here because you're Chip Hale. You love this place. Please do a good job.
The only thing that jumped out at me is maybe could be interpreted as not the right thing he said early on. I think he said, thinking his family is like, I'm going to be coming home every night. And he was really excited about that. And it's like, again, if you're trying to recruit, you probably aren't going to be coming home every night. Cause the guy owns a house in Tucson. And I think that's one of the reasons he liked to be the Arizona Diamondbacks manager. It's still in Arizona, close to home. And there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, that's that can be a great thing, but like, we'll see, I guess. You know, I think if you get into the season and, Chip Hale made a comment that, like, you know, we're going to do the little things right, kind of like the general platitudes, like we're going to field the ball well. And I know, like, error statistics, Arizona baseball was, for as great as they were, I think they were lower half of college baseball.
Yeah, they weren't great. Errors. Yeah.
Which, but also, like, when you say stuff like that and you're the baseball guy, you have this, old school attention to detail, you're talking about going to be defense. If they don't show improvement on defense, like, he's been a third base coach for so long. If he goes out there and coaches third base and he keeps running into outs or something like that, he's going to have no, like, if you hang your hat entirely on doing the little things right, if you don't have that happen, which it might be a different thing when you're dealing with 19, 20, 21-year-old kids than professional athletes in terms of getting consistent things out of. And it might take some time to figure that out for Chip Hale. I mean, maybe he'll do it incredibly well. We just don't know. It's an unknown quantity, but I think for people like you and me, I think share the general perspective that it seems like an uninspiring hire for a position that, like, I think I've compared to, I think it's actually on the same level as Arizona basketball in terms of like the quality of a destination job. And
there was no baggage for baseball.
Yeah. And this kind of just reeks of me of like, people that were clamoring for Damon Stoudemire to be the head coach, except for Damon Stoudemire was at least a head coach at a college program. Yeah,
not anymore. We could talk about that later on the show. But that's the thing. At least Stoudemire had somewhat of a track record. I guess what you're saying, like, if Chip Hale comes in and says he's going to be the defensive coach, and if they struggle there, it's like, well, what do you have to hang your hat on? It's like, Jay Johnson knew they were going to be able to hit. If they had hired Nate Yeske, you're like, okay, at least they'd be able to pitch, right? Like, what is Chip Hale's strength? As a manager, as a coach, we don't know. Like, there's nothing you can say. If nothing else, they'll be good at this. And I like having that. It's like, what is it, with Sean Miller, it used to be, you knew they were going to play defense. You know, even if they couldn't shoot the ball straight, they were going to lock you down, which that weaned, you know, a little bit towards the end. Like, that was not always the best, but there were certain things that as a coach, you could say, okay, this is what they're good at. If nothing else, and baseball's not that complicated. You hit, you pitch, you field. You know, like, that's it. And there's not one thing you'd say Chip Hale is a master at, that he's an expert at. You know, is it motivating players? And I will say this, too, is that of all the sports that are out there, baseball's the most individual. You know, where if you just have the best players, 1 through 9, you're probably going to win more often than not, which is where recruiting comes in. You know, like, baseball's not that hard to manage. And there are some people thought maybe Jay Johnson overmanaged at times, getting a little aggressive in certain areas. Like, it's baseball. Batter against the pitcher. If the batter's good, get a hit. And you keep going through the lineup like that. Just same. Likewise, pitching. If your pitching is good, you'll mow through the batting order on the other side. So it's not like Chip Hale has to be a master tactician. And teaching guys fundamentals, teaching them how to improve, like, that could be enough. But you need good players. And that's where it goes back to the recruiting. Like, can he do it? Will this coach, have you already retained Dave Lawn to be the pitching coach? Can they bring in talent? Jay Johnson, you said earlier, brought in talent. Was able to bring in guys who were drafted. And they're like, yeah, we're going to go to college. And fortunately, not everyone entered the transfer portal. Like, that was good. But that's what it's really going to come down to, is can Chip Hale recruit to Arizona, at least at the level that they have been? And if he can, then it'll probably work out. But I do wonder where his major league experience, like, no one who's growing up now knows Chip Hale played in Major League Baseball. A lot of them probably don't even know he managed the Diamondbacks, you know, 7 years ago or whatever it was. Like, they weren't great. You know, he was third base coach for Detroit. Cool. You know, he was the bench coach for Washington when they won the World Series. I don't imagine most people know that. So just when he walks into a living room, they're like, yeah, I'm Chip Hale. I played baseball. You did? Like, I'm not trying to knock him, but, like, just that idea of, like, he has that experience. Does he have the clout that comes with that experience? And I just don't, like, we'll find out. We'll find out in the recruiting.
By the way, you're reminding me of my favorite Dave Hickey quote from the press conference when he was building up Chip Hale's resume, which is a good resume, but he framed it as, and he reached the pinnacle of coaching in baseball by winning and playing a prominent role as a coach on the world champion nationals. It's like, he wasn't even it's the bench coach, which is, yes, an important role, but it's like, I don't know.
He's got a World Series ring, you know?
I don't know if you say that it's the pinnacle of coaching to be an assistant coach on a championship pro team.
Yeah, I was uneasy when their tweet announcing Chip Hale, the first thing it said was, like, Wildcat legend. I'm like, that's not the first thing that makes you qualified to be the head coach. Like, that should be, like, you know, world champion, this record somewhere, Wildcat legend, Chip Hale. But, like, that's not what they did. Like, the biggest selling point for Chip Hale was the fact that he's a Wildcat legend. Like, that's it. That is the number one selling point for him in this job. Doesn't mean he won't end up being successful, but just, it is a big risk for a program that should not have had to take one.
Yeah, to end this with an optimistic spin, Adam.
Please, I'm sorry, everyone. This is how I feel.
The Wildcat legend and resident of Tucson who has been all around the country maybe has some perspective to be able to convince people why coming to Tucson and playing for Arizona is a good, you know, a good choice, even for those that want, you know, for those that want to go and play at the next level. And he can just point to that and, hey, yeah, you can go to, you know, Eugene, and if you like all the nice mountains and forests in Tucson, doesn't necessarily quite have that at the same level, but I was living here even when I was traveling the country, and it's a reason I picked that. And I don't know. I'm trying to convince myself why it's going to work, Adam.
Hey, I hope you're right. I hope your convincing is good enough, and I hope Chip Hale proves me wrong, because we're all rooting for Arizona baseball, regardless of who's coaching them. So, but I talked about some guys, maybe convince them to stay. Over on the football field, there's some guys coming, some guys going. We're going to talk about it after the break.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome back. It's Wildcat Radio 2.0, and as we talked about before the break, Arizona football, there's been some movement, Brett. There's been some comings, some goings. Where do you want to start?
Let's get the bad news out of the way first.
All right, the bad news is some of the most recent news. Derek Mourning, who was a freshman last season, played a little bit, one of the more promising linebackers, has entered the transfer portal, and the timing is odd because by the time he did it, chances are he's going to have to sit out a season, whereas he would have entered the portal, I don't know, like a week ago or something. He could have been eligible to play this upcoming season. A guy who was figured to have a role on this defense decided he wants no part of it.
Yeah, and Derek Mourning is one of those guys that was relatively low-ranked recruit, but everybody kind of could see the potential there, and he showed flashes playing last season, kind of forced into duty with our linebacker situation, if you can call it a linebacker situation.
A linebacker, named. Singular, yeah.
Yeah, singular. You know, so and I think you're right to point out that the timing is a little bit peculiar unless he has some ability to try to get a waiver because he missed the deadline for the transfer portal, which maybe indicates there's something going on, not just like
not football related.
It's not like, oh, I don't like that there's these new guys coming in and I'm worried they're going to take playing time from me. Maybe that's a part of it. I don't know. And you know, there's a realistic chance he maybe comes back. We've seen that. How many guys on the football team have come back? And I think there's still like 1,000 guys in the transfer portal, and there's no scholarships when people can go anywhere else
right now because he wouldn't be counting for anyone for this season. So no one would be he'd be redshirting, I would assume, wherever if he was to leave. But it seems weird.
You still have to occupy in the 25 man classes. Unless he goes and walks on somewhere. But even then, like, even if you walked on, I think you're still not eligible because you'd have to redshirt. So it's a bit peculiar. It's obviously not great news to hear, but I think unlike if this had happened last year going into the season, we'd be like, okay, I think you and I are starting linebackers because there's literally nobody there.
Yeah.
You know, Anthony Pandy's coming back. Isaiah Johnson is still there. Jerry Roberts, Kenny Hebert are coming in. Malik Reed. There's some intriguing freshmen that you probably don't want to have to rely on. But, you know, between guys like DJ Fryer, Mojo Wiertz, Jabbar Triplett coming back from a torn Achilles. There's enough.
Freeburg, who played some last season.
You know, there's enough numbers there that you can probably absorb the loss if he does end up leaving permanently and not just, or if, you know, assuming he doesn't come back to Arizona out of the portal, but it's still a loss. And you know how I feel about depth in college football. And it seems like we can never quite get it.
Yeah. Well, it's just to me, the timing. And if it is not football related, hopefully whatever it is, he's happy with his decision, you know, hoping for the best for the kid. You know, he played hard last season. He played fairly well. There's a reason why we're kind of bummed to see him go, and it's because he looked like he was going to be a contributor this season, or if not this season, going forward. But whatever his reasons are for leaving, like, it doesn't seem like he didn't like his role, because he would have known that a long time ago if he didn't like his spot on the depth chart. And it's hard to imagine. I don't even think the coach has really been doing much with him, so it's hard to imagine that he's, like, upset about the new coaching staff now. So it's, without speculating as what it is, just hopefully things work out for Derek Mourning, because you know, no reason to wish ill upon him or anything like that just because he's leaving. But that's the bad news out of the way. Talk about the good news with Arizona football. Got a couple of commitments recently. Three-star defensive end Russell Davis II, a local kid. He committed to Arizona. And then also wide receiver, this one was kind of anticipated, A.J. Jones, who had decommitted from UCLA, pledged to Arizona over the weekend. So that's a couple of players who, you know, they're three-star kind of talents, but they look like they're the high three-stars. And the level of recruit, like rank-wise, you're like, okay, this is a step up from what Arizona had been doing under Kevin Sumlin.
Yeah, I'll start with I think he goes by Deuce Davis because he's Russell Davis the second. I think he goes by Deuce, right?
Yeah.
Deuce, as his friends call him. So I probably shouldn't call him that because I've never met the kid.
Yeah, well.
But you know, another important thing about him not just being an intriguing defensive end type talent, defensive end outside linebacker, another kid from Hamilton and Chandler again, yeah. Fish and crew, not just going and pulling talent from the Phoenix area, but from the powerhouse programs. I think Grayson Stovall, the yes. lineman, is also from Hamilton. If you start building, pipelines to places like Hamilton and Saguaro and some of these other big, Horizon, some of those bigger those programs, that will pay off beyond this year. And Davis seems like an intriguing talent in and of himself. But boy, it does nothing to hurt with, recruiting guys from that school or even from like the Southeast Valley. There's a lot of talent in Chandler, Gilbert, Queen Creek, et cetera. So that's, I think he's probably a little on the light side to come in and play right away.
6'3", 215 is what he's listed at right now.
Yeah. I mean, you probably want somebody playing an edge position more like, 20, 30 pounds heavier than that, and maybe he'll get there, but...
Yeah, he's like an inch and a half taller than I am and 10 pounds lighter.
Yeah.
that just doesn't scream edge rusher, that's what I'm saying. But he's got room to add some bulk, yeah.
Exactly, but, he seems like a guy that has a lot of upside. It'll be interesting to watch his development. And then A.J. Jones, it's... How often are we swiping commitments from UCLA... And receivers that are 6'4", it's been a little while for that. Like, he might even be big enough where he grows into being a kind of a flex between a big receiver or a tight end, right?
Certainly, you seem like a good red zone target.
Yeah, the Rich Rod OKG, he does not appear to be.
No.
And also with A.J. Jones, I think, according to 247 Sports, he's now the third highest rated. They have him at number 680 nationally. Arizona now is, if you're in the top 1,000 for those, like the difference between like a high and low 3-star, those are the kind of guys that you're bread and butter if you're Arizona to really build out a roster. And they have, they probably have 7 or 8 of them now. Because he's another one up there. 247 has him behind Jonah Coleman and Kyron Chambers as their third highest ahead of Noah Fifita, the quarterback, and A.J. Jones. It appears to be, they were all at there's a big recruiting event, I think last weekend. And Fifita was basically, there's a lot of evidence that shows that they were kind of working him and AJ Jones along with the other Cerevite clan. Mm-hmm. The three amigos of Juice County fame. And so also AJ Jones appears to have kind of a relationship with that whole crew, which probably doesn't hurt with some of the positive momentum Arizona's been getting with those guys.
You mentioned that. Who is it? Keon Burnett, who has kind of a legacy Arizona guy, but had been committed to USC. He visited a few weeks ago with the Cerevite guys, with Fifita and the receiver McMillan. Well, Burnett, who was pretty, a few weeks ago, he was all about USC, and now apparently he is decommitted from USC. And a lot of people are thinking that means he is considering, if not planning, on attending the University of Arizona. And it does make you wonder if they got Fifita, the quarterback, which they do have, he's committed to Arizona, and they can get Burnett. Then there's one more from the Juice County trio who you'd think the chances of getting him go up. And if that's the case, like we had the mailbag a couple weeks ago, right? And it's like talking about the recruiting and football turning these things around. If they could get the three of the Juice County guys, highly rated, especially two of them are 4-stars, one of them is like the receivers, one of the best in the country. Like, those are the type of commitments that if you get them in Jed Fish's first full recruiting class, that's how you can start to build something more special. Getting those high 3-star guys is great. You add a few 4-star guys, you pull them from USC. You pull them from Oregon and USC. You out-recruit those guys. That sends a message that could reverberate through the rest of the West Coast.
Well, and if you talk about all these high 3-star and 4-star guys, Fifita himself, if he was like 3 or 4 inches taller, there's no way he's not a 4-star recruit,
right?
At least.
No, he can play. Right. He can spin it.
Yeah. And I don't know if you watched any of the clips. He's got some pretty serious arm strength for a relatively compact frame. And he clearly has a rapport with both Burnett and McMillan. I mean, McMillan, the 4-star borderline 5-star receiver, is you know, doing interviews saying that Fifita is his best friend and he thinks he's the best quarterback in the country. And it's like, that augurs well for Arizona's chances. But yeah, it's, boy, not to get ahead of ourselves, but boy, if you have Jonah Coleman, who's the highest rated recruit as a running back, Fifita, McMillan, Burnett, AJ Jones, like, you know, Jed Fish is an offensive guy. You can tell he's what they're buying, what he's selling, or at least they're intrigued by what he's selling and what they can do with an offense.
Yeah.
Also, Fifita, if they're going to run a Rams type offense, I can see Fifita being fantastic in that, where there's a lot of like bootleg rollouts where the size is not as much of an issue.
And size doesn't have to be an issue. We've seen it with other quarterbacks. You look up the road, the Arizona Cardinals have a short quarterback, and I'm not saying Fifita is going to be a Heisman Trophy winner, number one pick in the draft, but size doesn't have to be an issue. Certain quarterbacks have a skill set and the ability to be effective despite not being 6'4". Like, it is possible.
It helps when you have receivers who are, in fact, 6'4".
Indeed.
And also, you know, talking about McMillan, just one thing that would be, I don't know if people realize how serious it would be of a deal it would be for Arizona to get him. I was looking at 247's top all-time recruits. Granted, it doesn't necessarily go back to, you know, it goes back, 20 years maybe. He would be the second highest all-time commitment to Arizona.
Yeah.
You know, ahead of where Rob Gronkowski was coming out of.
And that Gronk guy turned out okay.
Yeah, I think he was like the 4 all-time from their current list. And it's like, it'd be up there. It's up there with like Mike Bell and who's the corner that was, I think, the highest rated.
And then there's still, obviously, until these guys commit to Arizona, they're not Arizona Wildcats. Until they commit, and then sign and then get to campus, they're not Arizona Wildcats. But that narrative game that you hate so much, but it's basically all Jed Fish can win right now, if he is to pull him, AJ Jones, like you mentioned before, like, how often does Arizona get a UCLA commit to flip? You know, if Burnett flips, he was at USC. He's a California kid. He was and USC obviously is USC. That says something. And of course, if McMillan, they can pull him, and it helps to have their quarterback, sure. But they had to convince Fifita too. Like, this is a brand new coaching staff who had to convince these guys who had offers to go to other places to come to Arizona for a brand new coaching staff because they believe in what Jed Fish and that staff is selling. Like, they're absolutely all about it. So we'll see. But there's certainly a lot to be, like, all of a sudden, like, the recruiting's been good. You know, it's been elevated from what it had been the last few seasons. But if they can kind of close on some of these big fish, you know, no pun intended, but, like, they're out there. And if they can catch some of them, that changes the entire perception. Because it's like, you look at AJ Jones, okay, he's got some potential. If they get McMillan, you're like, oh, that guy's a, like, bona fide stud walking on day one. Now, granted, Booby Curry was a similarly highly rated recruit. He hasn't quite panned out yet. But I know McMillan's higher rated, but 4-star guys. Yeah, but like, so just because they have the rankings doesn't mean they're guaranteed to be studs. But you feel pretty good about Burnett, his size. You'd feel good about McMillan, his size, and their speed combinations. Like, it looks really good if they can do that. You know, because it's the type of energy, it's the type of momentum that the program hasn't been able to generate recruiting-wise in a long time.
Well, I think you hit on it right there at the end, Adam. Like, in recruiting, momentum is a real thing. And, like, all the words out of the – was it the opening, I think, is the event that was last weekend in California where these guys all were. And, like, all reports are that there's, like – like, they're getting national attention of, like, Arizona's, like, a legit player in these things. And all these players know each other. They're in the 7-on-7 leagues, not just the guys that go to the same high school. They're all talking at these events. They're all talking at 7-on-7 tournaments, or maybe on the same teams. Mm-hmm. They're all working each other in terms of where they think they want to go and what's driving them. And you know, boy, like the Fifita family in general, they're doing work. And he may end up being the most critical recruit of the Jed Fish era, no matter what happens in the future, because he might be the linchpin to kind of opening the doors to a lot of these guys and building that momentum. And then when you have that momentum, if you can sustain it, you can actually build on it, and then it makes everything easier going forward for a team that hasn't won in 2 years.
Yeah, we'll see, but there is a lot to be excited about there, not only what they have accomplished so far, but also what could potentially be on the horizon. Not that we're just hopeful, but there's legitimate reason to think that things could take another step forward for football recruiting. But Brett, we got one more segment here coming up. Let's take a break, and when we come back, Arizona men's basketball, they're not playing games, but some of their players are still looking good. We'll talk about it. Welcome back, and Brett, like we talked about, Arizona basketball, there's no Arizona basketball games happening. You know, there won't be for another few months, but Arizona does have some players in the FIBA U19 World Cup, and it's kind of fun tracking what they're doing. You know, Umar Ballo, for instance, he hasn't been bad. Had 16 points, 13 rebounds, 4 steals, and 3 blocks. You know, for Mali.
Mali.
And, like, he's a large man. We've been able to see that. Like, is he going to be a guy that Arizona particularly relies on this upcoming season? We'll see. He's a project. But you can see the tools. You can see the reason for, like, okay, if he develops, he could be a really helpful player for this team.
Yeah, I mean, he's been – I have the Izzy Desert Swarm up where Ballo has been averaging just under 29 minutes a game, getting 10 points per game and 8 rebounds per game, along with 2.8 blocks and 2.5 assists. That's if you get that out of him as a starting center and a big body in the middle of the court with the talent that they have around him, that's a win.
Yeah.
Right. And maybe he can even develop to do something further. But it's definitely a positive sign for, you know, he's still a little bit of a raw unknown. So maybe you're seeing some of that rawness translate into some real potential in playing on the world stage. That's probably not that much of a step down from, you know, non-con college basketball teams. You know, it's real competition out there.
Yeah, and of course, Azulis Tubelis, who we know is really good. We saw him last year as a freshman of Arizona. He's playing for Lithuania. He's averaging nearly 24 minutes a game, averaging 17 points, 7 rebounds, 2.5 assists, 2.3 steals, more than a block. He has looked every bit. I saw a highlight of his where he did like a windmill dunk on a fast break. I'm like, ooh, look at that athleticism. That's a guy who it's hard not to have super high expectations going into next season. Not only because what he did as a freshman, but what we're seeing, like he looks like a guy who's going to take that jump from his freshman to his sophomore season.
Yeah, I mean, I would even argue that he made the jump freshman season, where he was a different player by the end of the season, right? And we didn't get to see what he did in the postseason because of the self-imposed ban. But it's, you know, it's still a good sign that he seems to be taking that and that kind of slope of that progression and continuing it. So I think we're more likely to see the latter half of the season Tubelis, and maybe even a more consistent version of that. Mm-hmm. Next year, and maybe that's the leap for him, is just the consistency, because he had still had times where he would appear to disappear a little bit, and maybe that's where the biggest leap comes from. But so far all signs are good through the tournament.
Yeah, and same thing for Ben Mathurin, averaging nearly 15 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, shooting 45.5% from the field, 38% from 3. You know, he's another one of those guys where Arizona, they're glad he came back. You know, like, and you're hoping that he takes that jump too, because he has clear NBA potential. And if he gets closer to reaching it as an Arizona Wildcat, this team becomes exponentially more dangerous. And not that we're watching these games. I don't think you've been watching the FIBA U19 games. But just to see what Arizona's players are doing, some of the guys who, not Ballo, for instance, but like especially Tubelis and Mathurin, these are players that are going to be starters for Arizona. They're going to be relied on in Tommy Lloyd's offense in his first year. And if the whole theory is that if they take that jump from freshman to sophomore year, how much better will they be? And showing it in the U19, that doesn't mean they're going to do it in college basketball. But it provides a little more evidence that, hey, these guys could. Like, they're on the way to being those types of players. And if they do make good in that potential, they do take that step forward, this team could be a lot better than people are thinking.
Yeah, I mean, no two players are going to dictate both the floor and the ceiling for next year's Wildcats more than Tubelis and Mathurin. And it's not particularly close. I think the next highest is maybe like Kirk Carissa, Dalen Terry.
So, yeah.
But like these two guys, the guys that have the star potential and the people that can really be a difference maker. So if they keep on this trend line, that's going to be what tells us where the season's going to go. And then everything else will be like, let's hope we get, you know, we're not getting to see Dale and Terry in the U19 FIBA tournament, which I would actually be really intrigued because I think he could be a guy that makes a bigger leap. But I think he's leaping from he wasn't on Ben Mathurin's level or Tabellus's level last year. And even Kirk Harisa to some extent, I think, and he had limited games, but Tabellus and Mathurin are the guys that you need them to play like stars and consistently play like stars for the next year's team to reach its potential.
And if they do, next year's team is going to be really good. Speaking of, before we wrap up here, reaching potential, DeAndre Ayton with the Suns. Whoo, boy. Like, game one of the NBA Finals, we're recording this on Wednesday the 7th. Game two will happen on Thursday the 8th, so who knows what will happen there. But DeAndre Ayton, his first game, 22 points, credited for 19 rebounds, only because Chris Paul stole the 20th rebound from him at the very end of the game. But just, it's so much fun to watch him play like this. You know, because we saw it as a Wildcat, and of course his postseason run was brief, but you just knew this guy could be a star. And his first couple years in the NBA, he showed flashes. He seemed to be putting it all together here in these playoffs. And what a, I don't want to say coming out party, but he's certainly showing a lot of people who had doubts about whether he was worthy of the number one pick or if he could be a big man in the modern NBA and be successful. Like, yeah, he can do all that stuff and more.
But what if he dunked more, Adam?
Yeah, that's the question. Does he dunk enough for people to be satisfied? I don't know. But like, you see some of the stuff he does. Like, I was watching the game one, I was talking to my wife. It's like, there are some who's like, wow, maybe he could have dunked that. But also the dexterity it takes to have some of these layups through traffic where, yeah, some players will just try to dunk on everybody. That's fine. But some of the stuff Ayton does on the floor, not many people his size can do. Just around the basket, his efficiency around the hoop is just unparalleled.
Well, I always thought that he had a... Granted, he was a freak and a dominant player in college basketball, but I always thought his game and nature and demeanor were more suited for the NBA. He's turned out to be a pretty versatile and effective defender beyond, I think, even our Homer fan perspective, especially in the modern NBA game where you need to be able to guard guys on the perimeter and down low and alter shots and not foul. But even in, you know, things that were maddening when he was playing in Arizona, it's like he needs to not pass the ball out of the post when he's got the ball low because there's nobody on the perimeter that's going to shoot a three that is better than him trying to muscle his way up.
Yeah.
But in the NBA, when you're surrounded by talent, sometimes giving up the high difficulty shot that's still maybe a decent percentage, you know, passing out to Cam Johnson to shoot 50% from threes is the right decision, you know, and it's where his unselfishness, and he has always had a relatively high basketball IQ in the sense of if he was surrounded by that talent, it optimizes his approach and mentality and unselfishness. Whereas when he was playing in Arizona, it's like, oh my goodness, stop passing the ball. You're better than everyone. Just dunk it on them.
Fair. So it's been a lot of fun to watch. I know Sean Miller, former Arizona men's basketball coach, was in attendance for game one as a guest of DeAndre Ayton's to watch that. So he's got to be pretty proud of his guy. You know, but I think all Arizona fans are really excited to see what's happening because even the ASU fans are like, DeAndre Ayton's a beast. He's great. This is cool. So,
can somebody pull up all, you know, we crapped all over Tucson media with a broad brush with a few exceptions. With the press conference today, can we crap on the Phoenix ones and call out all of their like trade Ayton, he's a bust pick, like takes from the last 3 years? I'm looking at you, Dan Bickley.
I don't even know all the takes. I know there were a lot of bad ones. And yes, people wanted more from DeAndre Ayton, but while wanting more, there was also a way to acknowledge what he was providing and how it wasn't bad at all. Like, it was actually quite good, the levels of efficiency and what he was doing, double-doubles on the reg. You know, like, yes, you want it. It's like the people when Amari Stoudemire was in his prime, averaging, like, 28 points and 9 rebounds, like 9.5 rebounds. Like, why can't he average 10 rebounds a game? It's like, really? Like, that's the hill you're going to die on, that half a rebound per game? Or even if it was, like, 9, it was like 1 rebound per game. But, yeah, forget the other stuff he's doing. If he had one more rebound per game, he'd be good. Like, it's just silly. You know, but that's the expectation that come up being a number one pick, and Ayton was the first one that Arizona had ever produced, and it's very exciting to see him progress and become a type of player that everyone's looking at as a star. Because even, I will say, the Sean Miller era produced a lot of draft picks, a lot of lottery picks. Very few have reached that potential, you know, and been stars at the next level. And DeAndre Ayton he's doing it. And he's still got more room to grow. That's the thing. He's, what, 22? Like, he's going to get even better.
I was going to say, you know, maybe it was premature to label him a bust when he was 20 years old. And that, just imagine what happens when he turns 23.
Ooh. Like, maybe one more rebound per game.
you know, like the age when some of the big men of years, you know, in the past, like Shaq was at LSU for 3 years, you know, when he was, he's basically DeAndre Ayton's age now, or when he was a rookie that DeAndre Ayton is now.
Yeah.
You know, David Robinson was in the Navy and like was an older, like he wasn't, you know, some 19-year-old kid. Right. But it's really great to see him doing well. And it also, I've already heard some of the hot takes or questions of like, is DeAndre Ayton going to be the greatest Arizona alum in the NBA ever by the time it's all said and done?
Possibly. You know, Arizona's had a lot of really good players in the NBA, but you know, even like the best Arizona players, like Sean Elliott, wasn't a superstar in the NBA. You know, I mean, there's, of course, T.J. McConnell's career is not done yet, so there's room for him to take that mantle. But I would imagine that by the time the pro careers are done, DeAndre, I mean, Steve Kerr has a lot of titles, but no one would accuse him of being the best player to come out of Arizona in the NBA, right? So DeAndre Ayton seems like he has the best chance to be the guy you say, like, not to make, like, ASU has James Harden, right? Like, he's a star in the NBA. Well,
yeah. He's a star. That's how many championships has he won?
Well,
how many
right.
How many conference championships has he won?
But the point is, like, James Harden's been an outstanding NBA player. Trying to think of the last Arizona guy who was an outstanding NBA player, and I don't just mean like solid. Like Aaron Gordon's been solid, you know. But
Solomon has had a nice career,
but he's not a star.
I would argue, and this is also, I think, because he is underrated to a large extent, but I think he also has received more acclaim as his career went along. Andre Iguodala might be to date the most successful NBA player.
Yeah.
In terms of not just performance, he had some years where he played, you know, his stats were superstar stats, but he also played major roles and was a damn winner. And
yeah.
And on top, and part of that's like, you know, some of the best defense on ball you're ever going to see, versatility, you know, maybe the most underrated Arizona Wildcat of all time in the NBA, in my opinion.
But no one's going to look at Andre Iguodala and say, that guy's one of the best players in NBA history. And not to say DeAndre Ayton will get there, but Ayton has a chance.
But did Iguodala dunk enough at him? Did he dunk enough?
Oh, God, I know. You and narratives, that was the narrative that always bothered me. Like, DeAndre Ayton, 24-10. Yeah, but if he would have dunked that one more time, like, the ball went in the hoop. The goal of the game is to put the ball in the basket. He did that. Like, what is our issue here? That he didn't do it the way you wanted him to? Wow.
They want him to not just catch the lob and lay it in. They want him to catch it, grab under the rim, swing from it, hover over the defender and flex on him.
Yeah.
And pretend like the game doesn't keep going on and then he misses some play on defense.
Well, maybe next year. By year four, maybe Ann will add that to his repertoire. But whatever, regardless... You know, him and the Suns have a chance to win an NBA championship. I know Ayton's like the fastest number one pick to reach the NBA finals like ever. So, and it's not just DeAndre Ayton, but he's a big part of what the Suns are doing, and no one is arguing that now. So good luck to him. Hopefully him and the Suns can bring home the Larry O'Brien trophy, because that would just be swell. But otherwise, everyone, appreciate you listening to Wildcat Radio 2.0. Of course, you can find us on iTunes, Spotify, all those places you get podcasts. Make sure you subscribe to the Wildcat Radio 2.0. Make sure you rate us. You know, leave a review. We appreciate that. Follow us on Twitter at Wildcat Radio AZ. We'll probably send out a mailbag sometime soon. Of course, we have a lot of other content planned as the offseasons commence, because I'd like to think Arizona's done with coaching searches for a while. Like, knock on wood. I don't know if I just jinxed it or not, but assuming there's no more coaching searches to worry about, we're going to come up with some other things. You know, look at some position groups for football and other off-season type stuff. But, you know, it's Arizona Athletics. I don't know if we fear what's around the corner, but we know something could always happen.
I mean, you'd think we'd be out of coaching changes unless we've literally, like, lapped ourselves and somebody we hired before they even coach a game leaves or gets fired.
Yeah, so hopefully that doesn't happen. But if it does, we'll certainly talk about it. But in whatever does happen, you know, we'll catch up with you next week. And until then, remember to bear down.
Bear down.